JazzCast Pros.
Hello and welcome back to High Vibe Table Talks. This is your host, Marshawn Hargrave. And today I thought it would be really fun. I was doing some research on topics that I thought would be important to the entrepreneur community, and I found myself on Reddit. And there were a bunch of questions on there, and I thought, wouldn't it be kind of cool if I took some of these questions and answered them on the podcast, how I would answer them if someone did ask me these questions in real life. So I have five questions that I pulled from Reddit, and I am going to answer them on the podcast today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to High Vibe Table Talks, the podcast to help you, the cautiously ambitious woman, remove mental barriers and take action now so that you can achieve your high vibe desires. I'm Marshawn, your high vibe curator, cheerleader, and accountability partner. As a wife, a mother, and an entrepreneur who recently quit my job to follow my dreams, I understand why you may be hesitant to throw caution to the wind and take that leap. We are in season four, where we are talking tactics and tactical, operational, like tangible things that you can do. You know, a lot of what we focus on is both the action and the mindset. And season four has really been focused on the action. Season five, which I'm very excited about. I've already recorded a lot of guest episodes and have ideas for the solo episodes, but season five will be about the mindset. So right now we're in season four, talking all things tactics. So these questions did have to do with a tactical aspect, but yeah, let's get into it. So question number one, the topic was leveraging current career for side hustles or do something entirely different. As a university professor, I'm torn between using the career and expertise I already possess to create additional revenue streams versus doing something totally different for a change of pace. On the one hand, I can leverage my existing professional accomplishments and modest visibility to build a bigger platform and pursue opportunities related to my academic interests. Universities like mine also value people with public reach, so it could increase the value I represent to my employer if done strategically. On the other hand, I worry about burnout if the side hustle more or less leads me to just doing more of the things I already have to do for my job. There's always the worry that I would have to be more conscious of how my professional identity reflects on my primary employer. Not that I'd want to do anything wild, but conflicts of interest are a thing. In an ideal world, I'd feel like I'd want to do something that uses a completely different part of my brain, like teaching spin classes. But I also realize that it'd be much harder to start fresh in a completely different field. Has anyone dealt with this conflict before? What did you end up doing? I love this question so much because I think that we are in a society where it's like, oh, I went down this path. I'm a university professor. And at face value, I think that what we have to do when that question comes up is take a step back and think about what other skills have I really learned being a professor. I love the fact that this person said, in an ideal world, I feel like I'd want to do something that uses a completely different part of my brain, like teaching spin classes. And why I love that is twofold, because A, in an ideal world tells me this is what they want to do. They really are like, oh, wouldn't it be so cool if I went and taught spin classes? The second part is, yes, the content of what you're teaching is different, but you're still teaching. You're still engaging a class. You're still providing value to these students who come and are like in front of you and want to learn from you, whatever that material is. The skills you learn as a teacher and the way that you explain information is still a skill. And so I, for this person, what I would say is like, take a step back and really write down all of the skills that you learn as a teacher, as a professor. Yes, like that area of study may be different, but you can apply all of those things to so many different worlds. Like, I feel like now I have kind of lived in three phases. And, you know, I went to school to be a teacher and I learned so much from there. Then I went into sales. And again, I learned so much from there. And now working with women entrepreneurs and creating masterminds, I have this really cool ability where I'm blending things I learned about creating curriculum, about psychology, about motivation, about sales tactics, about, you know, like if I can capture the engagement of 25 students, those skills aren't that different than being engaging in a sales presentation, which isn't that different than facilitating a discussion around entrepreneurship. So while the applications seem very different, the skills that you use that are in your zone of genius are still the same. You just get to apply them in different areas. The other thing I would say is like really listen to the part of your heart that says, wouldn't it be cool in an ideal world? I'd love to do this. All that stuff before the but. You know, like, oh, but I already have this, or I already do that, or I, like, ignore that part of it. Listen to what you're drawn to, what excites you, what lights you up. You know, I also recommended the book Designing Your Life. It was written by two, I think they were UC Berkeley professors. And it's like, okay, if you would love to teach spin, do you go to spin classes? How much would it cost you to become a spin instructor? Can you be a sub as an instructor for a little bit? Go and like buy coffee for an instructor and ask them, what are the pros and cons? Like, what does the beginning look like? How much do you make? And really just start to like immerse yourself in that world, in that identity, and from someone who lives it all day, every day, understand, is that something like before you really dive all in, is that something that you want to take next steps into doing? You know, following your heart and saying like, wouldn't it be cool, especially if you have the stability of your full-time job, it feels like staying in that arena is your comfort zone. And it is easier to stay in your comfort zone, but that's not where the magic happens. That magic does not happen in the comfort zone. So take a little bit of risk and get a little bit uncomfortable. Again, it's not like, okay, you need to dive all in and become a spin instructor, but start taking some steps towards what that would look like. Really spend some time journaling and digging really deep into the skills that you currently have, that you currently have honed in on, things that are so easy for you that you wouldn't even give it a second thought, and think about how those can apply. When I was teaching, that's a very specific niche. And then I went into software sales to new car dealerships in the document management space. Again, that is pretty niche. Like, I couldn't then go and sell car dealers like insurance because I didn't know anything about the insurance industry. And so then I was like, well, what else is even out there? And I started networking and I started all the other things that people are doing. Like, we get very tunnel vision of like, this is what work is for me. So this is what work is for everybody. And like, there are so many ways to make money, to get hired, to have a part-time job, to sell things, to work, to be a consultant. There's so many things out there. And until you really start to explore it, you don't even know the tip of the iceberg for those. So number one is journal on what would be cool, what like lights you up. Number two is think about all the skills that you do have that you have honed in on in your current profession. And number three is network to see what else is out there. I think all three of those steps are small things that you can do relatively easily that will really start to give you momentum. All right. Question number two, how do I deal with competition in the digital product space? I released a successful product last year. They got me some ka-ching, so I started working on a second updated version. I've been working at it since February and plan to release it in May. Unfortunately, I saw some marketing launch campaign of a competitor in my niche with a very similar product, but their product is loads superior. It's not a copy, but very well made. I'm half jealous and half sad for my complacency. I should have launched sooner. Respect for the amazing product, though. I'm now worried that about how this competition will affect me. The only thing I have going is my product is cheaper. I saw competitors' pricing was about twice my own pricing. I would rather not disclose a product, but it's a digital product with a particular niche. Nothing groundbreaking like cancer care or something. That's all. I appreciate any and all advice. I'm just a small time business, so I'm unfamiliar with this aspect. There's two things that I always bring up when we get into the discussion around competition. And the first thing is, if you're ever worried about your product being oversaturated, your market being oversaturated, walk down the bread aisle and just count how many companies sell sliced white bread. It's like so many. And yet companies are still always selling sliced white bread. And it's like this very simple product, but there are so many there. So your market is out there. The second thing I like to say, especially because you said it's this one company, it's not like your market is oversaturated, it's you and maybe this one other company, is the fact that this other company put all that time into launching it tells me there's a market, there's a need. They saw a need and they put their product out there to fill it, and you can do the same. I think it is so encouraging that there are other companies doing what you want to do. And there are so many ways to do it. And so instead of taking this as a like, oh, I should have gotten out sooner, it's like, look at what demand there is for this product that you're like so close to having. I think that's amazing. That is so cool. And like, ride that wave. Because like, there are people who aren't going to want to pay what that company is priced at. And so, you know, a lower price is definitely a selling point. So your consumers are out there. If price is a differentiator, then lean into that. I wouldn't go super hard on the copy of like the least expensive or the cheapest or anything like that. But like, yeah, if yours is less expensive, then like use that in your sales and marketing for sure. I can't remember what the book was, but there are four quadrants that products fall into as far as like differentiating. And first to market is one. So like Apple, Nike, those companies that have like a ton of money that are like first to market. So the iPhone was like the first iPhone that ever did this. And the, you know, this iPhone is the first camera that can do this. You know, least expensive is one of those four quadrants. It feels like an inner critic is like, oh, why didn't I get that out sooner? Like, okay, like, let's go. Like, let's do it. Yours is less expensive. There is a need for it. It's a digital product, which means you have a huge market to pull from. You know, one of the beautiful things and the tough things about being in the digital space is like you can sell to everybody. So you have a huge market to pull from. So lean into it. You totally got this.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, question number three. Looking for feedback, considering launching a subscription service delivering worksheets to teachers monthly. Pre-designed and custom-designed options are available. I'm seeking feedback. One, is this a viable side hustle idea? Two, what features would appeal to teachers and boost revenue? Three, how much should the monthly subscription cost? And four, any advice for a newbie in the subscription-based business? So many thoughts there. But really, when it comes down to it, like one, two, and three, is this a viable side hustle? What features would appeal to teachers and boost revenue? And how much should the monthly subscription cost? And that is where you have to do like trial and error and market research. Like, there's not going to be this, like, all of a sudden I have done all this research and now I know exactly what teachers want to hear. There are websites out there like Teachers Pay Teachers and things like that where teachers are looking for workshop resources and they will pay for them. So again, just like the last question, what that tells me is that there's a market out there for it. If there are companies out there already selling something like it-ish, you do have to be different. And so maybe that's the monthly subscription. Instead of going out looking for it, it's delivered right into your inbox every month. And you get to pick like what topics or, you know, what curriculum you follow, things like that. I wasn't teaching. I am no longer. So I am not a great person to answer those questions. But I think you have to go out there and ask those questions to teachers. Like the entrepreneur Reddit threads is not where you're going to find those answers because they're not your end customer. The other thing too is that with subscription-based models, like the back end is easier because you're designing and you're delivering to, you know, the same thing. Or if there is some custom, then you do a little bit of work, but it's the delivery is not the hardest part. The hardest part is going to be creating those relationships so the teachers buy the subscriptions. So I think it all kind of wraps itself into, as you're doing market research, you're creating relationships with school districts, teachers, groups that host teachers in your area. So going to schools, you know, whatever age level you're looking to sell to, go there and say, hey, I have this questionnaire. I'm looking to build this subscription-based model for teachers, and I just would like to know what they would want out of something like that. And whether you do like a raffle for a Starbucks gift card if they, when they turn it in, or some sort of incentive, because teachers are very busy. They have a lot on their plate. And so some sort of incentive to gather the data. But you're also creating relationships. You know, we are a consumer-based society and we like to buy things. A lot of us like to buy from people that we know. You know, the Teachers Pay Teachers or Etsy or Pinterest, those are nice. And a lot of times those are selling to small businesses. But if I'm going to go on Etsy or I'm going to buy from someone who is in front of me and I know them and I have a relationship with them, I'm probably going to go with the person in front of me. You know, all of this groundwork that is initially market research, it is, you know, you're like, I'm not selling to you. I'm literally trying to create a concept that would be important and impactful to your teachers, to your school, to your staff. There will be people that will say, no, thank you. Like, my teachers have enough going on. Like, I can't. And so you don't know that until you try, you know, try going to a couple schools. Maybe high schools will be more apt to listen. I don't know their needs for worksheets versus elementary versus middle, but go and try. Where else do they get lunch? Where else do they congregate for book club or things like that? And so as you're creating those relationships for your market research, I would also be gathering email addresses and other information and just really like using this as a planting the seed exercise where you're creating the relationship, you're trying to understand what they're looking for with the idea that 6 months from now, you're going to have an end product and say, hey, I would love to offer this to your teachers. You were so crucial in helping me create this. So I'd love to give them a 10% discount. You know, I'm just spitballing here, but the idea is that the relationship doesn't just end in market research. And obviously the point is to share value. The point is I want to create this so that it provides value for you and your teachers. Oh, look, I created this, which is now valuable for your teachers. But remembering that both of those things are important. You know, the entrepreneur thread in Reddit isn't going to help you really understand your market research, but going to places where you find that will help you in the long run when it comes to the sales process of subscription-based business, which I think is the hardest part. All right, question number 4. Anyone dropped a customer? If so, why did you do it and how? No need to name and shame any companies, but please indicate small, medium, large. What made you do it and how did you do it? And I've done this in a couple of ways. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, initially, like, you just take people in, you're like, oh, I could do that. Or yes, let's, you know, you could be a part of this or whatever, you know, I'll take you on as a customer. And all of that is a learning experience of what does your ideal client look like? What do they sound like? What do they do? What types of boundaries do they have? What types of boundaries do you have? Like, what are their needs? How quickly do they need things? And you're not going to know those when you first start out. So everybody's going to have customers that are like, oh my God, why did I do this? You know, that is very much part of the process. The crucial part of being a successful long-term entrepreneur is learning from that and saying, I'm going to change. This will not be a customer I will say yes to next time. And so there are a couple of ways that I would recommend dropping a customer. One is you can outprice a customer. You can say, hey, you know, I'm raising my prices. I have to, you know, with inflation and my experience now, my prices are going here. And a lot of times customers will say, well, you're too expensive for me now. So that is one way to drop a customer. The second one is really growing in your boundaries. And again, a lot of times that's like a learning lesson of like, oh, I said that, you know, I would do this project. I never talked about how many revisions they would get. So for the next one, I'm going to make sure that in the contract, it says you get 2 revisions. It really is about like setting up those boundaries and learning what boundaries are important to you. If a customer is like, I need something in the next 12 hours. And you're like, well, I have lacrosse practice and spin class and dinner and bedtime to do in the next 12 hours and get some sleep, that's pretty much impossible, and they lose it, then it's perfectly acceptable to say, like, depending on the contract, I'm not here giving legal advice at all, obviously, but to say, you know, it just doesn't feel like we are aligned in this partnership. It just isn't working based on my availability and your needs. And so they're uncomfortable, difficult conversations. But if you can't like outprice them, working on setting up your boundaries, whether it's in your contracts, initial conversations, written conversations, you know, whether that's email or contract or things like that, so you can refer back to it, are all really, really important. Again, it's not easy and not something that you're going to know how to do initially. So much of the initial part of business is finding customers and learning what is and is not your ideal client. So if you're going through that, it is totally normal. It is not easy. And I feel for you, but there's so much to learn from it. And question number 5, how to conduct a market research for online business. Hello. So I've made a post here not long ago regarding positioning myself as print-on-demand seller on Etsy and other marketplaces. A lot of the answers were to do a market research regarding trends, niches, prices, competitors, SEO, etc. Since market research is a really wide spectrum, how have you started researching in the market, and what have you included? What tools have you used besides eRank and Google Trends? What aren't that useful? Are there any others? Would it simply be better to hire someone on Fiverr, for example, to do it for me? Is this something that I could do alone without any help, or is it more advisable to do with a professional? Since I'm a student, I'd really like to start as low cost as possible regarding setting up a print-on-demand store, so I'm really thinking about hiring someone as my last option. Thank you for your answers and time. And I think this is such a like a normal place to be in of like, I want to have a print-on-demand shop. Okay. You are selling to everybody, so you're selling to nobody. And I don't think that this is something that you need to pay for. I don't think that market research, you know, and I say that in the idea that there you have finite resources, which is your time, energy, money. If you don't have a lot of time, then maybe you do have to pay for someone to do the market research for you. You know, if you're creating this really successful, if you have this like really high demand job and you only have like 4 hours a week to devote to this, then maybe it's a thing. But being a student, I would think that you would have time. And if you're a college student, maybe you want to print on demand for the sororities and fraternities. So during their pledging or during football so they can have sorority stuff at the football games or whatever, you know, maybe that's it. And so now go hang out where they hang out, talk to them. You know, this kind of goes back to the other conversation with the teacher subscription is like, go start creating relationships with those people. That's how you're going to get the research that you want. Go hang out where they eat, where they socialize, where they hang out, and start asking them questions, planting the seeds. That's where you're going to get your market research, understand how much it costs, how often they're going to buy, what trends are important to them, what times of year are important to them, what turnaround time is important to them. And if you do realize that that is your ideal client, well, now you have this base to sell to once you have figured all of that stuff out. So if you are a student and you have time, I don't recommend paying for market research. I think it is expensive. And I think that it is something that you can do, especially if you're like, I want to print on demand. Well, you have not niched down at all yet. So really figure out what that niche looks like so that you can really hone in on your market. And those are the five questions that went so fast, but that was so fun. I hope you all enjoyed. And remember that big dreams and small steps will transform your life.